Hello everyone and welcome to another Recap Race Analysis. Yes, the second one of the day. Screw you, Torino and Paris-Nice. But this one is Paris-Nice Stage 2. And as always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of Out of Cycling and one third of the Echelon Cycling Podcast. Yesterday we saw a win for Ola Coy, but what exactly happened here on the second stage?
Well, Stage 2 took us from Tarly to Montargis, 177.6 kilometers, and it's pretty much the only nailed-on sprint stage that people could see of the week. So it was a big day for a lot of the sprinting teams to really warrant bringing their sprinters here. Lots of, you know, high-quality sprinting talent. It was really DSM Firmenich PostNL who took it up at the start of the day and just did a lot of the work. There was a little bit of competition for the KOM classifications between Bergadeau and Jonas Ruch because, of course, they were in the breakaway yesterday. I mean, what ended up happening with that is that I think Ruch took the first KOM and then Bergadeau took the second one. And because his teammate Pierre Latour took second place on that second KOM sprint, it means that Matthew Bergadeau will be in the KOM classification, but that's not really the most important thing of the day. There was an intermediate sprint where Marco Haller won ahead of Mads Pedersen and Mathias Skelos Jensen. The interesting part being that Pedersen fully lunged to try and beat Skelos Jensen to second place, which is curious because that's his teammate. And you'd think that the bonus seconds might mean more to Skelos in GC at the end, but I think that Pedersen was thinking we can take the overall lead at the end of today if I get these bonus seconds. So, but at the end of the day, Skelos gains 2 seconds in GC, so that's pretty cool. But going into the finale, it was kind of, it got a little bit faster, about 5 kilometers to go. We went over a railway bridge and big wide road, and it pretty much led with like two spears. There was a kind of right hand side of a road team and a left hand side of a road team, and it was just this massive drag race. It went to the left, and then Tudor came through with a massive surge on the right-hand side. Matteo Trentin up this slight drag of a few percent, really put the hammer down, and Tudor just started dominating the sprint, and nobody really came around them. Everybody was sprinting to try and get onto the coattails of them. We saw then a rider from Visma Lisa Bike come to the front and add his force to the front of that train, and then we saw a Lidl Trek rider who realized that Pedersen wasn't on his wheel and therefore swung off, rather a smart move. However, when the sprint opened up, it was Arvid de Kleijn, who was in really good form in the UE Tour, only being beaten by Tim Merlier, who is probably the fastest sprinter in the world right now. He lit up the sprint with Laurens Piffy in the wheel and every other sprinter in the world in his wheel. And it looked for the world like somebody was going to come round to climb because he was leading it out with at least 150 meters to go, but nobody managed to come round him, which means that Arvid de Kleijn of Tudor Pro Cycling, Pro Continental level team, takes a win at Paris-Nice. Big victory for the Pro Continental outfit, who have been in incredible form, made some fantastic signings between 2023 and 2024, and very deservedly get themselves a World Tour victory. So the top 10 is as follows: Arvid de Kleijn ahead of Laurens Piffy, Dylan Groenewegen, Danny van Poppel, Gerber Thaissen, Sam Bennett, Dries van Hestel, Mads Pedersen is in 8th place, Pascal Ackermann in 9th, and Matteo Sobrero, interestingly, in 10th. The GC standings, because Piffy took 2nd place, even though Pedersen took those bonus seconds, Piffy takes the lead of the race for Groupama FDJ at only 21 years of age, an incredible performance by him. So he now leads the race ahead of Pedersen and Coy, who are all on the same seconds because of the way that the bonifications have worked over these first few stages. Jorgensen's in 4th place in GC, then Remco Bernal, Skelmosa, Groves, Sam Bennett, and Jon Balendexia. Scott, it was just kind of like a pretty standard sprint day, but what do you reckon about Arvid de Kleijn and this victory for Tudor?
Obviously, we're going to say he's the new sprinting superstar. I was quite disappointed with a lot of the big juggernauts, but yeah, really good form there. Their underdog team, obviously, as you said as well, Pro Continental, and they really took it to the big boys here. And as you said, he's got pedigree as well. And yeah, it should be a good, and it's a newer team as well. So this is a huge scalp for them. And against all the established teams, I think this is a huge draw. But Yeah, if he can get in the right position again, maybe they could do it. They were quite dominant in the closing finale, which was a bit of surprise to me. DSM, like you said, that had put a lot into this, kind of disappeared in the last few kilometers.
Yeah, they really didn't get much out of today. Their highest finishing today was Tobias Lund Andersen, who is really the lead-out man for Jakobsen. So the fact that he finished 11th, Jakobsen, by the way, for those interested, finished in 28th place. So the fact that DSM worked on the front for 170 kilometers of today, only to get 11th on pretty much the only sprint day that Jakobsen can compete in, is pretty rough, to be honest with you. I think that decline his victory is just incredible. I love that. It's a bit of a shame they're not going to the Tour because I think he would be a really great addition there. Tudor are going to the Giro. Dainese's the only confirmed person, but I think Decline, you would argue, is a faster sprinter than Dainese. But Decline won Milano-Torino last year. It's very easy to forget that. He is a really interesting rider. He's not like, some spring chicken sprinter. He's 29 years old. He came from Human Powered Health and Rally. Like, he's really come out of the woodwork, quite a kind of late emerger in the sprinting talent field, but just fantastic to see that there's a new sprinting talent on the field. And I know that Melier and Philipsen are over in Tirreno Adriatico at the moment, but I think there's an argument that this guy is the third fastest sprinter in the world right now. And certainly the fact that Tudor have really backed him and got a really well-nailed lead-out train is incredibly just impressive. And I think, massive hats off to them for backing him and getting a World Tour victory. That's incredible.
Yeah, bringing Matteo Trentin, I think, as well, has been a huge asset for them. But I mean, he nearly crashed. That finish was insane. You really highlighted it to me how insane it was. At one point, there was an Intermarché rider holding off an EF rider as a Tudor rider was coming down. I would not want him to be in that peloton for sure. But yeah, do you think it was just the kind of. There was a lot of obstacles in the last few corners of the stage, and also, well, 15 kilometers before, it was quite a calm day, and then with 15 kilometers to go, an RK round kind of came down, and then we were like, well, maybe that's the only thing that'll happen. And okay, it was the only thing that happened, but it was very close to not.
There were definitely some corners within the last kilometer. If you were leading into the last K, you had a massive advantage. And I think, Pedersen was probably going into that final kilometer, maybe in 10th wheel. And the fact that he finished 8th is a real testament to that. And I just think that Tudor with, I mean, their lead-out train, like we said, is pretty young, you could say. Well, young is inexperienced. They haven't had like loads of time, I guess, together. But yeah, the combination of Decline on the end with Trentin, Ziegler, Arthur Kluckers and Ploemers in there. I mean, three of those guys are eligible for the white jersey. Like, that shows the kind of youth that they have here. But Trentin at the front is really making things work. And I just think they got it right. Sometimes in sprinting, you have to get a little bit lucky, right place at the right time. But they really made the move at the right point. And the fact, I just can't believe nobody was even really close to them. Nobody was coming up alongside them. And I just think that's incredible. But I think arguably you could, I think a big shout out to Piffy. The fact that he's leading the race now, 2 second, he finished third yesterday. He finished second today, leading the race. The fact that he was beating a lot of the big sprinters as a guy who, a week ago was in the move with Wout van Aert and Velens and Laz Kano and Kerner Brussel Kerner. He was climbing well in the Tour Down Under. He won the Cadel 11, the Cadel 11's Great Ocean Road Race. He's having an absolute stormer of a year and a massive talent for Groupama to be taking into the future. But they'll probably lose the lead of the race tomorrow because it is a team time trial, unfortunately. But good performance by Piffy nonetheless.
Before we just do a quick preview of that, in terms of Olav Kjær as well, were you a bit disappointed with him in the end? Obviously, he was very supreme yesterday, but yeah, didn't quite come through this time.
Yeah, he finished in 17th place today. I think, yeah, his teammate was on the front with like 800 to go. So I think they were just expecting that he was going to be in his wheel. But obviously, I think the road just went from that really wide highway with 4K to go to like a just like single lane. And I just think that people just got shuffled back. And I just think he just ended up in wrong position. I think he did have, you know, plenty of lead out men around him, but it's just that they couldn't break through. Like, the race wasn't almost to the finish line. It was a race to like 2 kilometers to go. Because if you got there first, then you were going to have a bit of an easier time staying at the front rather than trying to come from behind. But it was a little bit, I think it's just a lot of disappointment today from a lot of the big sprinters. Like you say, Coy, from Jakobsen as well. I think Pedersen might be a little bit disappointed that he didn't get in the top three today to take the lead of the race. So yeah, and Damar as well, 13th, Groves, 14th. There's probably a little bit of disappointment going around today from the only pure sprint stage of the race.
I mean, would you say that this potentially has just been the perfect scenario and decline, despite you saying him being the third fastest, might not actually be that?
No, I think the fact that he finished second 3 times of a UAE Tour, which had some serious talent
fair enough.
I think that's certainly a testament to that he's not just some, it's not just some one-hit wonder that's just kind of come out of nowhere and just luckily got right place, right time. He got onto the right wheel. It was a team effort. It wasn't just surfing the right wheel and jumping out of the last 50 meters. It was a well-drilled lead out. And I think they deserve all the plaudits for that victory.
So anyway, stage 3, as you alluded to, horrendous team time trial. I'm a huge fan of team time trials. I love them, but not when you tinker with the rules. And what is it? It's like the first 4 fastest or something, 3 fastest, and they all have individual times or something. I zoned out, if I'm honest.
So the time for the team is taken just on the first rider, not after the fourth. So the time for the team is the first rider over, right? But then everyone else after that gets the same, that gets like the time they got when they roll over. You see what I mean? It is a little bit more complicated, but it does. I think they're just trying to spice up the team time trial a little bit by having this kind of, you know, last man standing principle where everyone can properly sacrifice themselves and just there's just one guy left. Quick Step of the big favorites, of course, they've got the world time trial champion who, if they just launched by himself, I'm sure he'd be able to probably beat a lot of the teams in this race individually. But yeah, it's a rolling terrain, 27 kilometers. There are 2 climbs in there, 2.2k at 4.3% and 2.3k at 4.5% from Auxerre to Auxerre. Yeah, I think it's Sudal Quickstep. I think they've got probably one of the best teams here. But I think UAE Team Emirates also got a very strong team as well. And Ineos usually pull out a good performance as well. So I'll be interested to see how teams play it. I think Tarling has said in a press release that he's just going to get used up early rather than being saved for some like last-ditch attempt, like tete-a-tete against Remco. I know you don't like the tinkering of a team time trial, but at least there's one included. We don't get to see them too often, so at least a modified version is better than none at all.
I mean, why not do it on that final time trial at the Tour de France, but at Paris-Nice, so all the teams who are here, they don't get the individual experience they get as a team. Ugh, what are you doing, ASO? But anyways, with that, that's basically it for our second preview or second recap of Paris-Nice. And if you haven't already, make sure to check out our Treno Adriatico. The first one has come up on the channel. And if you haven't already, hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and check out Patrick's own channel, I'll Do Cycling. And if you want to hear more about him, the National Cycling Podcast, the new episode is dropping today as well, number 58. So with that, thank you very much for watching, and we will see you tomorrow.